Well, here it is Labor Day, and I'm going to say already. Okay, as you get older, already is said pretty often, isn't it? So, Memorial Day and Labor Day are the bookends of summer. Okay. They close and reopen the schools. They open and reclose the swimming pools. They sandwich between them a lot of the vacations that we enjoy with our families. And they go together in one other way as well. They're both of them a little bit controversial in terms of how they got started and what they continue to mean. When I was a young man, a boy growing up in the deep south of Texas, okay, we scarcely knew that Memorial Day existed. And even though Memorial Day had been expanded long ago for its present significance, it had actually started as a day to honor the Union dead in the Civil War. And in the 1950s, that was still remembered by people down there. Labor Day was started in 1882 by the Knights of Labor. It was a group of labor unions, and it was intended to honor the accomplishments of the labor union movement. And both in those days and in our own, the labor union movement remains kind of controversial as to its impact on society. Well, today I'm not going to talk about labor unions, either one way or the other. I'm going to talk instead about labor itself, about work. But you know, work itself, apart from any connection to unions, is often seen pretty negatively, isn't it? For a lot of people, I'm afraid work isn't as fun as it might be. It can be boring, repetitive, exhausting, soul-deadening, sometimes exploitative, too. And work has, for a long, long time, been known in popular culture as the curse of Adam. Work is known as the curse of Adam because of what it says in Genesis 3. Let's look at that. To Adam, he said, "Because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return." Well, my goal today is to talk about what the Bible has to say about work. Not labor unions, but just work. And we're going to see that despite the curse of Adam, that work is, or should be, a basically good thing. We're going to also develop from our text some specific purposes for our work that the New Testament talks about. And I want to especially emphasize our attitude about our work as God-ordained ministry. Well, starting with the Old Testament, you would think I would start with the curse of Adam, but I actually want to start before that. Okay. Do you know the curse was not when Adam began to work? He already had a job, and it was a good job, and evidently he didn't mind it. When Adam had been created, he was given the task of dressing and keeping a garden. He was something like an orchard person, a person who took care of trees. And when we look also at the stewardship commandments that we find in the same area, he was commanded to replenish, subdue, and have dominion over these things. In other words, if we want to say what was Adam's job, he was basically a park ranger, wasn't he? He was a park ranger with a special responsibility for the orchard in one of its corners. What was the curse? The curse wasn't work. The curse was how hard the work was going to be. And even more, the curse was death. That Adam, no longer in proximity to the tree of life or what it stood for, was a creature made to die and would begin the death process. As we move through the Old Testament scriptures, work per se is not seen as an evil thing. Unlike the Greeks and the Romans, who thought of especially manual work as demeaning and low, the Jews never thought that way. They thought in particular that working with your hands was normal, natural, healthy, and God-ordained. The Psalms are full of the blessings of honest work well done. In Proverbs, we find the same thing, the virtues of hard work. We also find in Proverbs emphasis on the evils of idleness. And Proverbs talks, too, about how grateful to God we should be for the skills that we have by which we earn our living. And in fact, the Jews didn't just see work as necessary, but they thought of it as commanded. It was something that God orders us to do. In the fourth commandment that we think of as the Sabbath commandment, it actually begins with another commandment. 6 days shalt thou labor, before talking about what we're to do on the seventh. And the Hebrews thought of our laboring on for 6 days and then resting on the seventh as a kind of a commemoration of God as creator. But they didn't think of God as having created the world and then backed off from it, no longer having anything to do with it. They saw God's creation as ongoing. And our work, as we go about our jobs, is thought of as participating in the creative activity of God. The rabbis taught that work is the privilege is sharing in God's own creative process going on right now. And quoting one of the rabbis, all work, however humble, is really work for God. Perhaps Jesus had this in mind when he replied to criticism for having healed on the Sabbath, as recorded in John's Gospel. My Father has been working even up to now, so that's why I work too. The idle rich, on the other hand, are denounced pretty scathingly, especially in the books of the prophets. Sometimes it's because a lot of the rich got that way by unjust methods, okay? And so they're denounced for that. But even the rich who got that way by just methods are very often denounced because they lack compassion and unwillingness to help the poor. And we find, too, that sometimes they're denounced because idleness is viewed as a defective way of life, not a fitting thing for human beings to do. Indeed, the rabbis were required to support themselves with a trade, manual work kind of trade. And we find that they weren't allowed to be paid for their teaching and their other synagogue work. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul had been a rabbi before his conversion to Christianity, and his trade was being a tent maker. And when he started churches and stayed with them to try to get them off the ground, he supported himself by plying his trade as a tent maker. Other rabbis were weavers, tailors. They were smiths, potters, shoemakers, woodcutters, people of all possible kinds of professions. As we turn to the New Testament, we find that it inherits and builds on the Hebrew view of work. It sees work as natural, good, healthy, God-ordained. You know, our master himself was a lowly carpenter, wasn't he? In fact, he was such a lowly carpenter that in his hometown of Nazareth, which was thought of as lowly enough, okay, what good thing can come out of Nazareth, it is asked, okay, that he was despised as, isn't that just the carpenter's son talking over there? Don't pay attention to that. This is no doubt a precursor to how things work in Jesus' kingdom. You and I both know how they work. That the mark of greatness is service. That the highest shall be the lowest. And we find in Jesus' kingdom that all of us, every one of us, as Cana emphasized last week in her sermon, are to strive to have the mind of Christ. And how is that shown? He did not think of equality with God as something to hold on to, but emptied himself and took the form of a slave. We too are to empty ourselves and take the form of slaves. I had mentioned earlier that we would have some texts that talk about the purposes of work for Christians. Let's look at those now. There are four of them. First, from 1 Thessalonians 4. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. You should mind your own business and work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. From Ephesians 4, as Carolyn has already mentioned with us, okay. Anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. from 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day, laboring and toiling, so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we did not have the right to such help, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you to imitate. And finally, as Paul spoke to the elders from the church at Ephesus, recorded in Acts 20, you yourselves know that these hands of mine have supplied my own needs and the needs of my companions. In everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words that the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. From these texts, we can identify four purposes that we Christians have for our work, for how we earn our livings. One is to gain the respect of outsiders. If outsiders don't respect us, they won't pay much attention to our efforts to witness to them. We need to show them that we are productive, hardworking citizens, that we can pull our weight, that we can achieve worthwhile things. Two, to not be a burden to others if we can help it. Some people can't help it. That will bring us to our third in a moment. Okay? But insofar as we can help it, don't be a burden. Pull your own weight. Third, to be able to help others when they are needy. The New Testament church sure did a lot of that. As you read early in Acts about how the church, where everybody would put everything together that they owned so that they could take care of the needy. And nobody claimed that anything they owned was immune or just theirs. They were willing to share it with everyone. And they took up collections in the churches for the needy elsewhere. It was huge, helping the needy. And finally, to be able to support the congregation's various ministries. Paul supported by supporting himself rather than being a burden on their resources. In our time, we have a lot of needs in our congregation. We have salaries to pay. We have missions work to support. We have a building, and that building has expenses of insurance and upkeep and bills and all of that, and many other things, too. We work to support that ministry as well. Martin Luther and John Calvin, the great beginners of the Protestant Reformation, they had these kind of teachings in mind from the New Testament when they put forward what later came to be known as the Protestant work ethic. They saw worldly work as a duty that benefits the individual and also benefits society as a whole. They were very clear that we didn't do these works in order to be saved. We're not saved by works. But they did insist that works were a sign of salvation already received. We work because we were saved, and not in order to be saved. Calvin, who believed that individuals are predestined for salvation or damnation, saw success in particular for work, if you prospered, earned a lot of money, did well, as one of the signs that you were among the elect. And even for those of us who don't think of predestination his way and don't always interpret success the same sort of way, it nevertheless remains that it is true that we Christians are supposed to produce good works, not to be saved, but because we already are saved. Thus, as we read in Ephesians 2, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this not from yourselves, it is the gift of God. Not by works, so that no one can boast. For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus, to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. In my opinion, Luther and Calvin, though right about many, many things, had too negative and too legalistic a view about work, when you read what they have to say. They view it too much like nasty medicine, okay? It's something that, it's good for you even if you don't like it very much. You know, the idle hands are the devil's playmate kind of thinking that we have. I think they often miss the positive, enjoyable aspect of our work, or what work can be and should be. I think that we can view what we do in the workplace as a holy vocation, as a ministry. And instead of thinking of ministry as something that happens here in Sunday mornings, we should think of everything we're doing, no matter where it is done, as part of ministry. Some of you have earned your livings in the medical profession or are doing so now. We've had people who are CNAs and EMTs and nurses and people who help the disabled. Okay. And all of those are ministries. They're doing part of God's work in our community. We have people who've been working in grocery stores, stocking, checking people in and out. This is important. Humans need good, safe food. They need to be able to secure it. This is a ministry in our community. We have people who are oil field workers. We need energy. We need to be able to light our homes and heat our homes. We have policemen. We have military people. We've had barbers and drivers and teachers and farmers and daycare providers and I don't know how many careers just in our little group. This is how we earn our livings, but every one of these things is a ministry. And when you report to your job on Monday morning, if that's how you do it, you're a minister. And what you're doing for the purposes that we read about just a little bit ago. And that leads to a deeper point. Work itself can be and should be redeemed. In its unfallen state, work as it would be in a sinless world, it can be joyous. Probably it was joyous for Adam. You know, tending the garden was not reported as something that was burdensome for him to do. It could be the kind of thing where we flex our godlike muscles, that we're allowed to create, to nurture, to supply, to love, to do things that build people up. Sadly, in the present world, which is not a sinless world, a lot of people's work isn't that good. Sin has twisted the good world that God made. Sometimes it's due to greed, sometimes to the lust for power, sometimes to cruelty, self-promotion, various things. The world's a mixed bag, and so we have some bad work. We have some work that's very hard on people, especially people at the low end of the economic ladder. Work that'd be no good really pretending it's fun. Okay? It's just plain hard. Okay? And yet, even that kind of work can be a ministry too. You know, it's not just us. It's the whole of creation that's groaning together, waiting for redemption, waiting for the rebirth. And the good news is that rebirth has already started. It started when Jesus came. The sin-twisted mess that was wrought by the first Adam and the curse placed on him that we're still suffering for in a lot of ways, that curse is being undone. It's being undone in the second Adam. And we can imitate the second Adam by humbling ourselves to whatever our work is like, even when it's hard and even when it's onerous, to saying, I'm going to enter that workplace to try to redeem it. Part of my redemption may be taking on things that are undeservedly hard or undeservedly, you know, bad. And yet I do it for the glory of the Lord. I do it to have something to share with the deity. I do it to have something to help support the ministries of my church. I do it in order to have an impressive impact on people who work around me. And let us always so consciously work for and support the way we live, the way we vote, too, that we can bring about better conditions for every person's work. That's part of God's work, to improve the lot for everyone. And let us thus, bit by bit, be undoing the curse of Adam in the workplace. So what should we carry away from today's sermon? These things. We should view our workaday jobs not as evil or hateful, but as God-ordained ministries. Whatever it is we're doing, it's a God-ordained ministry. These ministries have specific purposes: to gain the respect of outsiders, to not be a burden on others when we can help it, to be able to help others who are needy, to be able to support our congregation's many ministries. This ministry mentality shows itself in our attitudes about our work. Enthusiasm for the work that we're doing is infectious. It helps have an impact on people around us. It helps us to transform an act that could be odious into something that can be joyful when we have the right attitude about it. And we should think of every action on our jobs as service to our Lord, as ministry in His church. Here, as in every other subject, Christianity abolishes the distinction between the sacred and the secular. It just plain doesn't exist. We find, as the great scholar Edersheim said, commenting on the Apostle Paul's view about work, that to the spiritual, nothing is secular. To the secular, nothing is spiritual. Our religion is not a matter of separated from life, holy places, holy times, objects and seasons. All things are holy. Our lives have been baptized, and not just our bodies. We are to regard how we earn our living, how we live 24/7 as a ministry in every possible way. So finally, at the deepest level of all, as Christ entered a fallen world to redeem it and us, let you and I enter a fallen workplace to try to redeem it, to restore labor and the laborer to the roles that God intended for them from the very beginning. Thank you.
You've been listening to Steve Trammell at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to those local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep those podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button, or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.